Thanks for joining me. Can you please introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Dan Reed. I live in downtown Silver Spring. I'm an urban planner, and for the past 9 years, I've written a blog called Just Up the Pike.
Great. And this is actually the second time I've interviewed you.
Hey, you're right.
But for those of the audience who may not know about Just Up the Pike, can you give a little backstory on that?
Well, it's a blog updated pretty infrequently now, but still updated, about planning, design, development, and community issues in Silver Spring and Eastern Montgomery County, which is generally everything east of Rock Creek Park. So right. Communities like Tacoma Park, Wheaton, White Oak, Burtonsville, Colesville, Calverton, etc.
Great. Today you are fairly well versed in a lot of what's going on in Montgomery County.
I try.
But that being said, I mean, Silver Spring is your home. And from that standpoint, we're going to be focusing on our conversation on downtown Silver Spring. So can you give me a little bit of background in terms of what is going on in downtown Silver Spring for those who might have their blinds closed all the time?
You know, when I was a kid in the early 90s, downtown Silver Spring was not a place where you wanted to go. We lived there and it was very quiet. In fact, my mother said that she moved there in 91 because it was quiet. And in the past couple of years, there's been this amazing renaissance downtown. And in fact, even within the past 2 or 1 year, I've seen it's a huge change. There's more activity on the streets. There are new shops and restaurants opening all the time. There are hundreds and thousands of new homes that have been built in the past couple of years and are going to be built in the coming years. There's a really strong sense of community here, and people like Pete and the good folks at Silver Spring Inc. who are really devoted to this community and interested in building a sense of place here. And it's a really exciting time to be in Silver Spring.
And with that being said, there has to be a negative side. Things are changing, therefore.
You're right.
I'm leading you, but.
Oh, yeah, yeah. There are, I think, negatives to everything. Construction can be disruptive. The Silver Spring Transit Center was an annoying thing that we had to walk around for 7 years, and now it's finally open. So that negative has now become a positive. There are traffic issues, not so much because there isn't enough room for cars here, but really because it makes it hard to get around Silver Spring on foot or by bike and really take advantage of all of the great things that we have here in such close proximity to each other. That's a big issue in my book. I think affordable housing is going to become an issue in the coming years as more development happens and more, new construction tends to be really expensive by default. There are legitimate concerns that the people who make this community great, whether it's young people or artists or immigrant community or just anybody, won't be able to afford to stick around. And that would be a real shame.
And you've explained this to me before, that Montgomery County has a certain requirement in terms of moderately priced dwelling units. Did I say that?
That's right. Yes. Since the 70s, the county has required that a certain percentage of new homes in any development, it's usually 12.5%, but sometimes can be higher, need to be set aside for households making lower incomes or making below a certain threshold below the area's median income. And the idea is to A, ensure there's a supply of affordable housing, and B, to make sure that affordable housing isn't all concentrated in one place, and so that you don't only have affordable housing in areas that are very unattractive or dangerous or lack access to jobs and services and amenities. So even here in downtown Silver Spring, every new building that gets built, including the one we're sitting in, we're at my house right now, has affordable housing in it.
But you don't think that is going to that is enough to prevent certain people from being forced out of the area?
It's a start. I live in the Silverton. We have 200 units, so 25 of them are set aside for households of lower incomes, and that's good. But ultimately, the best solution is to increase the housing supply. It's economics 101. You increase the supply to meet the demand, and prices go down over time. And, you know, I did an analysis on the blog a couple of years ago looking at different residential apartment buildings in and around downtown Silver Spring, and found that, you know, as we build more buildings, you know, new buildings tend to be very expensive and luxurious, and those are the most, you know, high-end buildings. And then the buildings that are older, you know, there's a concept called filtering. Those buildings filter down and become, you know, tomorrow's affordable housing. You know, if you want to live in one of the apartment buildings that was built in the 60s and 70s in Silver Spring, they're a lot cheaper than buildings built this year. And by allowing new buildings to get built and come on the market, we're ensuring that buildings as they age can sort of become naturally occurring affordable housing.
And that also entails, I mean, development in general includes removing or demolishing buildings that may not be residences, and in some cases may have some historical value.
It's true. It's a mixed bag. You know, there's a new building that's going to go up at Georgia and Ripley where what the record store is called, CD and Game Exchange used to be the Meditation Museum, the Bethel World Outreach Church, and Dale Music. That entire block is going to become a new high-rise apartment building. And I have mixed feelings about it. Like, I liked all of those businesses. I love the buildings they're in. I love the way they contribute to Georgia Avenue. They're historic. They contribute to the sort of nice, compact, human-scaled street fabric that makes Georgia Avenue awesome. And we're going to lose them. But in return, we're going to get, you know, several hundred new apartments, new residents who can support new businesses. We're going to have ground floor retail that will support new businesses. Hopefully, the developer will have some sense and not just rent it out to Walgreens and more banks. But two businesses that are local and interesting and sort of add something to the retail scene that isn't currently there now. I would really be interested in some pupusas. That's a conversation we were having on Twitter today. So I think a pupusa Rio would be a very nice place to start.
There is a void of pupusa spots in downtown Silver Spring.
Not just pupusas. There are lots of food and other retail that it seems like businesses are sometimes reluctant to come here and open, which is it's a weird challenge to have. Things are really good, but there are just some retailers that can't be convinced, it seems.
Like what?
Taylor Gourmet. I would really like one here.
You're very, very specific in who businesses that are not coming here.
I want some sandwiches and pizza. Get some pizza. No, those are both local chains. They're chains, but they're locally owned and locally founded, which I like. It would be great for them to come here. Of course, you know, they open in Clarendon, they'll open in U Street and 14th Street, wherever, you know, the latest trendy neighborhood. And you would think, okay, Silver Spring has the population and the spending money and all the office workers at lunchtime to support these kind of businesses. And still nothing. Or even to talk about, you know, City Place. There have been...
Ellsworth Place.
Ellsworth Place, right. There are... The mall formerly known as City Place. There... They've announced a number of cool retailers in there that are coming. We're going to have TJ Maxx. Ross, which was there 20 years ago, is coming back. We're going to have Dave & Buster's, the discount version of Forever 21, which is called, I think,
Red 72?
Something like that. The Not Your Average Joe's, which is like a national chain restaurant. But there are still a lot of vacancies in the mall that haven't been announced yet, like what's going to fill the rest of the space in the mall. And, you know, in talking to residents in Silver Spring, I've heard a lot of not necessarily complaints, but sort of unease about the tenants coming in. That, like, as much as I love and as much as other people love TJ Maxx, there's a question of, well, why four discount retailers in the same mall? Because you already have Burlington Coat Factory and Ross. I'm not Ross, Marshalls. So... is what happened to other chain retailers that would be perfectly appropriate for a mall, and why didn't they want to open there? You know, I talked to folks from the Ellsworth Place management, and they had a long courtship with a lot of different retailers, Target, Bed Bath & Beyond, who ultimately decided not to locate here. And despite all of the great things that have happened in Silver Spring, that's one personal frustration that I have, whether or not I'm going to go to Bed Bath & Beyond that much, just because, you know, someone is still saying, for all the good things that are happening here, it's still not good enough.
Are there specific things that you think preclude them from moving in?
How like real can we get in this podcast?
As real as you feel comfortable being public about.
I think there are some people, retailers, whomever, who are not always comfortable with the demographic mix in downtown Silver Spring. You know, Chris Leinberger is a professor, or was a professor at George Washington University, who did a report a couple of years ago about what he calls walk-ups, which are walkable urban places. And he did this big study looking at the D.C. area and found that more and more of the region's economic output is coming from 43 urban neighborhoods that have compact, walkable characteristics, served by transit, and have a certain level of density and activity. Silver Spring is one of them. And in his report, he specifically lauded Silver Spring for being able to remain diverse both racially and socioeconomically in the face of a lot of development and sort of resisting the gentrification that has been so rampant inside the district. And that's a good thing. When I go out on a Friday night and I go to downtown Silver Spring and I go on Ellsworth Drive and I see all of the different kinds of people there, it is so enriching. It's so exciting to see that. That's what makes this place great. But at the same time, a lot of businesses and retailers, when they do their analysis of where somebody is going to locate their business, a lot of times they use formulas that tend to preclude areas with a large minority population. There's an author, Cheryl Cashin, she wrote a really awesome book about 10 years ago called The Failures of Integration. You should read it. And she talked about these formulas that big national retailers use. And it doesn't matter how affluent a community is or how much spending power there is, if the population is not homogenous enough, big chain retailers will kind of shy away from a place. And, you know, I worry that Silver Spring could be a casualty of that.
And what would you have to say about the potential for, say, these big businesses to move in and that diversity or that heterogeneous aspect to go away, right? I mean, it's a chicken and egg, right? Like, is it the retailers that are not coming in and so that's why it's diverse, or is it... I feel like that's a bad...
Well, if Target doesn't want to come here, that's their problem, not ours. I guess I sort of come at it from a different way, right? There are... I don't think Silver Spring is going to become this lily white place. I don't think that's possible, at least for now, knock on wood. And that's okay. If Silver Spring remains a diverse, awesome place and some national retailers say no, that's fine. As much as I'd love a Target here, I can do without. At the same time, I think there are people who complain about big chains coming here and forget that, you know, you go to a place like Columbia Heights, which has Target, it has Best Buy, it has Bed Bath, and all the other big chains, is a really diverse neighborhood. Like, it is basically like the mall for all of D.C. and serves a really, really diverse population because, as it turns out, no matter what color your skin is, you like to go to Target. So it's sort of a weird, like, cognitive dissonance because clearly chain retailers were able to figure out Columbia Heights and that's okay, slash... It's okay to have big chain retailers in a place because they serve a really broad array of diverse people in a way that some of the local niche businesses that I also love don't always accommodate. And that's okay, too. I'm kind of losing my train of thought.
Okay. Well, I mean, but nonetheless, you make this comparison between Columbia Heights and Silver Spring. And maybe it could boil down to something as simple as geography. But... What do you think may preclude large chain retailers from moving into Silver Spring what is it different? Why is it different from Columbia Heights?
I think part of the issue is Columbia Heights itself. It's really close. It's only 3 or 4 miles away. And when chain retailers aren't using, you know, racially weird formulas to determine where to put a store, they're also looking at how close are their neighboring stores.
Sure.
And somebody might look and say, well, you know, we have a store 4 miles away in Columbia Heights, so we'd need to have one in Silver Spring. And that was an issue of timing. You know, the DC USA Mall opened in 2008. If, you know, the folks at Ellsworth Place had maybe beaten them to the punch, we'd be talking about a very different situation. On the other hand, it's very expensive to live in Columbia Heights. It's $1 million to buy a condo next to the Target. I am really happy that we don't have that problem.
Do you think that Silver Spring, I mean, how soon do you think Silver Spring will have problems like that?
I don't know. You know, you look at what's happening on George Avenue in the district, Columbia Heights, Petworth, now Brightwood becoming sort of the new hot neighborhood, and there's really ambitious house prices for neighborhoods that, you know, my grandparents lived in Petworth and Brightwood when I was growing up, and I spent a lot of time there, and it was a place where your grandparents lived, and that was that. It was nice, it was stable, it wasn't sought after. But you can see that sort of tide of gentrification making its way up Georgia Avenue. And I think it's only a matter of time before it crashes into Silver Spring. I'm really curious what'll happen. I don't know if it'll be good or if it'll be bad. Part of it might be that, hey, maybe this is just too far for the cool kids in DC to travel. And we won't get the most of it. We will only have so many tapas and so many small plates and so many stores that sell $14 artisanal sea salt. I'm generally okay with that. I'm tired of small plates. I want regular size plates again.
I want a full size cheeseburger.
Yeah.
What? Do not give me a slider. Okay.
The sliders are such a ripoff. Oh my gosh.
So, segueing from there, you mentioned a couple things that are some of the things that you think are kind of the negative aspects, very specific negative aspects of the development in Silver Spring. What are the things that you think are, oh, this is super exciting. This is happening, and this, you know, if like this is a sign of good things to come.
So, for years, I would beg and beg my friends who lived in DC to come here, and no one would ever want to do it. And then this year alone, not one, not two, but 4 people I know who live in the District of Columbia have agreed to come meet me in Silver Spring, nay, volunteered to come up here, including 2 dates. I'm disappointed to say that neither of those dates really worked out, but hey, that's their loss. They can take H Street. But it's interesting to see people from around the region starting to discover Silver Spring. I think there's a critical mass of activity and business and just interesting stuff here. And that's been the most interesting development. Roberto Rodriguez told me there are 21 Ethiopian restaurants in downtown Silver Spring. That's a lot. And with that comes differentiation. You have Ethiopian white tablecloth places, Ethiopian sports bars and hookah bars, even an Ethiopian Chipotle, Ethio Express on Sligo Avenue. That's really exciting that you have so many different kinds of experiences you can have here. All the cool things that people think of when they think of DC, like the record stores and the ethnic restaurants and all of that, they are actually here now. I'm proud to say that we have 4 record stores. That's really cool too. I'm excited when I go out on a Friday or Saturday night and I walk down Georgia Avenue, and this summer, you know, for the first time I can remember, there are people out. There are people outside, like, and they're not just rushing to their cars or to go home. They are, like, out. They're going to the bars. They're having a good time. They're making a night of it. And that's really exciting. There have been decades of work that have gone into making downtown Silver Spring happen. And it's so gratifying to see all of that finally come to fruition.
Okay. How about any specific development that you feel is super exciting? Or even maybe not exciting, but what are the things that people should be paying attention to?
Well, the Blairs is happening. If you haven't been on this side of the tracks, you might not have noticed that part of the apartment buildings, the Blairs, what were once called the Blair Towers, those four buildings were demolished last winter, and in their place are going to be four new high-rise buildings, the first of which is called the Pearl, I think, and that's going to open in either 2016 or 2017. And eventually the entire Blair Shopping Center is going to be redeveloped too, with a series of new parks, new retail, housing, and a new Giant, which if anybody patronizes the Blair Park Giant as I do, will be a welcome improvement. So that is going to be a big deal. 1,400 new apartments in that one block, but it'll happen over the next 10 or 15 years. So it's a longer time frame, but it's definitely going to have a big effect on South Silver Spring and how that area develops. Another thing I'd want to pay attention to is what's sometimes called the Ripley District. That's the area west of Georgia Avenue and south of Wayne. There are two new buildings that have opened on Ripley Street in the past year or two. One's called the Solaire. The other's called 1155. I like them both. I think they're really great buildings architecturally, and really sort of, especially 1155, has really raised the bar for good design in Silver Spring. And some new buildings are going to be joining them very soon. One is a new shelter for Progress Place, homeless shelter, which is being built behind the Silver Spring Fire Station as we speak. And another apartment building is going to go where the old Progress Place shelter is. There's going to be an extension of Dixon Avenue that'll connect to Silver Spring Avenue, make a little grid in that area to make it create more pedestrian, bike, and car connections. Of course, there's the aforementioned building in Georgia between Ripley and Bonifant where Dale Music used to be. That's going to be built in the next couple of years. What else is there? There's the new building next to the Silver Spring Library, which is called the Bonifant. It's affordable housing for seniors, and it's great to have a new source of affordable housing. B, it's great to have a source of housing for senior citizens. They can stay in this community too. And C, it's actually a pretty attractive building. It's got a nice scale to it. I really like the color of the bricks they've used on the outside. It's going to have ground floor retail right in front of the new Purple Line station, a little plaza there. And I really hope, you know, when all that gets finished, the Purple Line opens, you're going to see a really nice little urban space there. It'll be really cool if the developers are keen on getting some actual retail there and not just letting it sit vacant like the Viridian has for the past 7 years.
How about...
My answer is too long. I feel like I just, like, go and...
Do it.
Cool.
By all means. How about... the area, what I kind of refer to as like Fenwick area, like Cameron Street, that area.
There's
around Second Ave and those streets, yeah.
Yeah, there's a new condo being built at Second and Fenwick called the Octave, which is there. I think they're selling right now. I haven't been in there yet. I'm really curious. It used to be an office building from like the 60s and is being converted into condos.
Which is uncommon in Silver Spring.
Yeah, there are a lot of buildings like that. There's the Octave. There's Eastern Village Co-Housing on Eastern Avenue. There's the Aurora. There's the Gramix. It's a growing trend as a lot of these office buildings that were built in the 50s and 60s are functionally obsolete. They don't work for businesses today as in the same format. So a couple of things are happening. A lot of these buildings are just being turned into housing because they're pretty good for that. And other times you see sort of new uses taking them over. You know, the World Building is a really good example. That is a 1960s office building that is no longer suitable for sort of high-end office tenants. But what do you have there now? You have co-working spaces like Creative Colony. You have the new Catalator makerspace in the basement there. You know, these are not your traditional office building uses, but they are really well suited to some of the sort of big open floor plates that you normally see in office buildings. And you know, one of the big issues in all of Montgomery County right now is we have a lot of old office buildings that are ending their useful lives. And some of them are not, some of them are good locations, some of them are very bad locations. And there's a question of what do you do with them? And the answer is probably going to be a mix of housing and sort of alternative uses like co-working or makerspaces and a lot of other things. It's a really interesting opportunity if we harness it. You know, I see, you know, some people might look at a suburban office park and think, oh man, office space, like the movie, that's lame. But done right, it could sort of be like our version of the old warehouses and factories from 100 years ago that were turned into loft apartments.
Hmm. Something that has been, maybe this conversation is a little bit dated. I feel like it's fallen off the map. But in Montgomery County, they've been talking about attracting businesses, especially in terms of like Marriott potentially mm-hmm. moving. What are we doing in terms of, and it was arguments, I think, to a large extent that factored into infrastructure, transportation infrastructure to attract millennials. And that's why they'd work for that business because there's the Purple Liner, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
So, that being said, what does the loss of office space or lack of office space mean for Silver Spring? If these things are being converted to residential and what have you.
You know, since the 60s when Montgomery County made its big sort of general plan for the whole county, the idea was that Silver Spring would be this sort of office center, like a downtown. And that's predicated on having a large office presence here. Turning some of these older office buildings into housing, it's still okay, though, because I would rather have a full apartment building than an empty office building. You know, the office market in the entire county is very weak right now. Part of it is because there is a growing interest in urban locations, which tends to favor even more closer in spots like DC or Arlington, though I think that'll shift. Part of that is the fact that a lot of the office buildings in the county are older and so just are not attractive to higher end office tenants anymore. Part of the issue is that companies are looking for more and more ways to reduce the amount of space they need per worker, whether it's encouraging teleworking or maybe, you know, getting rid of cubicles and having sort of open layouts, or getting rid of sort of the big fancy corner office for the important guys, or what's sometimes called hoteling, which is an arrangement where nobody has a dedicated desk, but you can kind of work from home sometimes or from the coffee shop sometimes, and when you come in you just sort of take a desk wherever. And all these new configurations mean that companies need less space, which means they rent less space in buildings, which means there's less demand for office space, which means there's more empty office buildings. So there'll be a bit of a shakeout, but I think ultimately Silver Spring will continue to be an attractive place for businesses to locate. The issue is, I think, finding out what's the right fit. What are the kind of businesses that do want to locate here or that could benefit from locating here?
Okay. How about what is the reality of the Purple Line in your estimation?
It's going to happen.
And can you put a timeline behind that?
Well, this year, by the end of this year, they're going to start moving utility lines in downtown Bethesda to make room for the Purple Line. If that's not a sign that things are going to happen, I don't know what is. Governor Hogan came to his senses and agreed to put up funding for the Purple Line. Montgomery County and Prince George's County are going to put up their shares of funding. We just need to secure the federal government's $900 million promise for the Purple Line. And we are on track. In January, they're going to receive bids from different private partners who are interested in building the Purple Line. And I've heard that in May of 2016 is when we'll see a groundbreaking, and that it will open for riders in 2021.
What is that going to mean for downtown Silver Spring?
It's going to mean 5 years of really disruptive construction.
That's good to know.
I mean, it's we have to be realistic about it. It will suck. The benefits will be enormous, but it'll be painful. And I say this as somebody who lives directly abutting the train tracks, and I think Pete's microphones are too nice for this, but the train just passed, may not have heard it. And so the construction is going to be in my backyard for the next 5 years, but it's important to remember the longer term impacts of that. You know, you look at pictures of DC when they were building the metro, you look at U Street 25 years ago, it was ruined by the construction of the Green Line. It was very, very difficult. And now is a very successful, thriving neighborhood. We talked about gentrification earlier in this podcast, but it is doing okay for all of that. And I think the Purple Line will be able to do the same. By which I mean, it will be a good thing to happen, not it will unleash a torrent of small plates on Silver Spring.
All right, good to know.
No more small plates.
What about... So, I mean, in that intermediary, the 5 years of construction, what are the things that are going to be the worst aspects of that?
It is really incumbent on the county and other, you know, local officials to make sure that impacts to local businesses and residents are as minimal as possible. When you think of streets like Boniface Street, where the Purple Line is eventually going to run, there are a lot of really awesome small businesses on there. From Kefa Cafe one day to Mandalay to the gun shop and the bookstore, they are going to have their entire street torn up for construction for a very long time. We need to make sure that people know those businesses are open, that they are ready for customers, and that they receive whatever assistance they need to stay afloat so that they are there to enjoy the benefits of the Purple Line when it finally opens. And the same goes for businesses on Fenton Street. It goes for Long Branch. It goes for Tacoma Langley. All of these communities. We need to make sure that those businesses can weather the storm so that they're around. Because a lot of them have been very good partners and supporters of the Purple Line. And they deserve to reap the benefits one day.
Great. Since you brought this up, what, in your estimation, are some of the other neighborhoods outside of downtown Silver Spring that are exciting or people really need to be paying attention to because there's changes a-coming or what have you?
You know, I think Long Branch is going to be a really exciting place to watch in the coming years. It's been off the radar for a long time, but there is just an amazing community of local businesses there that offer great things and have really cool people that run them that are very committed to the community. I used to live very close to Long Branch. And I used to go to El Golfo a lot, and now I don't, which is a problem. It's not their problem. It's my problem. I need to go there more. I think when the Purple Line opens, it'll become an increasingly desirable place to go shop or live just because it'll be that much more accessible. So that'll be cool to watch. It's interesting to watch how Tacoma Park has sort of emerged as the latest hip neighborhood du jour in DC, kind of because it's on the line. You know, you have Busboys and Poets down there, you have, you know, well-regarded restaurants like Republic, you have a ton of new housing coming in along Carroll Street in DC, right on the line. So it'll be interesting to see how that neighborhood evolves, and it'll be really interesting to watch how Littlesville changes in the coming years when the Purple Line opens as well. That has a community with a really long and rich and interesting history, is one of the longest running black communities in Montgomery County. And yeah, it'll be cool to see what happens there.
Cool. You definitely omitted White Oak.
Oh yeah.
By design or?
No, I mean, I lived in White Oak from sixth grade until I graduated high school. I love it. There is a really big plan that the county has recently finished called the White Oak Science Gateway Plan. The goal is to make White Oak a center for science and research and technology, building around the Food and Drug Administration campus there, and also to make White Oak more of a town center, sort of like a little baby downtown Silver Spring, with shops and housing and offices and all sorts of other things within sort of close proximity, and to create a place where people can get around without a car, and to create a sense of place and community there in a community that has often lacked that. One thing you might not know about White Oak is that if you've ever seen the show The Wonder Years, it's based on the writer Carol Black's childhood growing up in White Oak in the 60s. And White Oak is no longer the sort of idyllic sitcom suburb anymore. It's maturing. It's a much more diverse place. It has a lot more challenges than it used to have. And I think I'm really excited about the White Oak Science Gateway Plan that will help make this community more relevant, more prosperous, stronger community, and provide the kinds of stuff that people are really interested in having. Slightly more urban environment, the ability to travel without a car, places to gather and hang out and enjoy life and enjoy and celebrate their community. And one thing that my friends in East County have been waiting for a really long time, some nicer places to eat. You know, we didn't really talk about all the great restaurants that are down here in downtown Silver Spring, which is awesome. But our brothers and sisters in East County are still waiting for a nice place to eat that is not TGI Fridays or IHOP. And one day it will happen.
It's a beautiful dream.
Yes.
It's a great vision you have.
I try.
Okay. How about... you know, to some extent, I tried to address the issue of people who may not know what's going on, or, you know, the whole segment really is to kind of enlighten people a little bit in terms of things they might not know about the area. Outside of this interview, where are people going to go to find out what's going on? Where should they find those points of engagement?
You used to have this really great newspaper called the Gazette. I don't know what happened to it, but I haven't seen it recently. That was like they had all the stuff. I remember being 7 years old and seeing on the cover a story about this amazing mega mall they were going to build in downtown Silver Spring called the American Dream Mall. Of course, it didn't happen, but I wouldn't have heard about it if it wasn't for the Gazette. So if anybody knows what happened to it, that would be a good place to look.
How about other places besides the Gazette?
There are some... you know, our friends at Bethesda Magazine have a really awesome blog called Bethesda Beat, which has become an invaluable resource for stuff happening in Silver Spring and East County, despite the fact that it has Bethesda in its name.
How could you, Dan?
What are you going to do?
How could you?
Aaron Kraut is a Silver Spring native. We went to high school together, and I'm glad he's looking out for us.
And tangential to this conversation, but I mean, along those lines, since the Gazette's gone, what are the solutions?
I don't know. You know, it is really challenging to figure out journalism and a business model for it in today's climate. There have been so many attempts to make it work. The Silver Spring Penguin was one almost 10 years ago. Patch was an attempt to create hyperlocal news that was also financially profitable. And at its peak, we had, you know, dedicated community websites for Tacoma Park, Silver Spring, and Wheaton with their own editors and reporters and everything, and they're gone. I don't know what it would take. I hope somebody's thinking about it. I know a lot of people that are. But until then, it'll be a challenge to provide that local news. If somebody would like to pay me to write local news all the time, I'd be up for the challenge.
I was waiting for the plug.
You know. But in the meantime, you know, people are going to be at a loss for knowing what's going on in their community. And that's a really significant part of democracy. We kind of need an engaged, educated public to, like, vote for things or go to public hearings or, like, tell their elected officials what their expectations are of them, to hold them accountable. Without that, it's a lot easier for people to get away with things, and we move one step closer to the dystopia envisioned in the movie Idiocracy.
Great. So is there anything else that needs to be said about downtown Silver Spring?
Things are good. Things are really good. Things are going to get better. I'm really excited to see where things are going to go. I would really like some bike lanes. We didn't talk about that very much, but no. I would like some.
Okay. More so than what we already have. We have Sharrows.
Sharrows are not enough. They're good on low traffic streets, like residential streets. They are not a substitute for real protected bike lanes. There are studies that say like something like 60% of the population is interested in bicycling, but don't. Because it's scary to do so. And that leaves only the most able-bodied or reckless people like me, to go out and fend for themselves in the street, which is fine. I'll do it. I do it all the time. But if we really want to get people out there doing it and taking advantage of the fact that everything in Silver Spring is really close together, we need a real network of protected bike lanes that get people out of traffic and give them a safe, comfortable place to ride.
What about the idea that Colesville Road, Georgia Avenue, and East West Highway are state highways. How does that factor into what kind of challenges does that create for making Silver Spring a more bikeable or even walkable place?
It's hard because the SHA is another layer of bureaucracy, because you have the county to work with, now you have the state to deal with, and SHA's priorities historically have tended to be more about moving cars really, really fast. You know, look at the name of East West Highway. It's a highway. The idea was you would drive really fast on your way to Bethesda. That's not the case anymore. You know, these are urban streets that serve urban neighborhoods now, and the focus has to shift. SHA has done a good job by adding the little pedestrian refuge islands you might have seen on East West Highway. There's one by the NOAA buildings. There's another up the street by Denizens. They have yet to paint the crosswalks on them, which would be really nice. That would be really nice. But it's a good start.
And what is the reality of... I have no idea what this process looks like, but obviously that layer of bureaucracy, as you mentioned, adds these challenges. What would have to happen in order for that to be removed?
Pitchforks. No, seriously. I mean, it's...
They simply wouldn't give up their...
State,
jurisdiction.
You know, as I say this as a transportation planner, state DOTs tend to be more conservative than other departments of transportation, and their focus tends to be on cars over everything else. So it is a challenge getting them to focus on something else. In terms of bureaucratic like layers of like stuff, anything that happens on Georgia Avenue or Colesville or East West Highway is a state highway project. So you have to go through them to make anything happen, whether it's a sidewalk or a bike lane or bus lane or anything really. Maybe not a different layer, maybe not a new layer of bureaucracy so much as a different layer, with different standards and requirements and people who are slightly less connected to our community than maybe the Montgomery County Department of Transportation would be.
Okay. What else did I forget?
I don't know.
What's your website?
JustUpThePike.com. It's on the internet. Also on Twitter, at JustUpThePike, all one word. And also on Facebook, you can search for JustUpThePike. I was going to say Google, but because like as a generic term for search, but that's not how Facebook works.
That's true. Good catch. Facebook would be upset.
True.
Well, awesome. I appreciate the time. I appreciate your insight. I'm sure our listeners do too.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah.